Vermont Yankee is shutting down at the end of this year. We'll be talking about how Vermonters can stay involved in issues associated with decommissioning and economic development as we enter this new era. We have several guests today. I have Chris Williams here in the studio with me from the Citizens Awareness Network, and we'll be talking with him in just a little while. First, we'll be talking with Jeffrey Lewis and Jennifer Stromston from the newly founded Institute for Nuclear Host Communities. Later in the show, we'll bring in Deborah Stolaroff from the Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance. We'll talk about several things, including the new Citizens Advisory Panel that was created during the legislative session, the thermal discharge permit, the Certificate of Public Good, and economic development issues. Thanks for listening today. If you want to join our conversation, you can call 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Chris, first, thanks for joining me in the studio today.
Glad to be here.
As I mentioned, we'll be chatting with you in just a little while, but first we are going to welcome Jeffrey Lewis and Jennifer Stromston from the Institute for Nuclear Host Communities. Jeff and Jennifer, are you with us?
I am.
I'm here. Thanks for having us.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you.
Jeff, how about you go first and introduce yourself and talk about why you started the Institute for Nuclear Host Communities.
Sure. I've recently retired as the executive director of BDCC, which is the Regional Development Corporation for Windham County, which is the county where Vermont Yankee's located. We also at BDCC had a partner called CEVEDS, which had done a significant amount of economic research and strategy building for the region. One of the issues that we had identified 3 years ago was that all of our planning did not take account of what would happen to the economy when Vermont Yankee closed. And since it was then and has been for a long time an active issue of continued operation, we were aware that that was not something we could put off for 10 or 15 years and say, well, we'll just wait till a license runs out. We knew that was a much more pressing issue. So we launched something called the Post-VY Task Force to take a look at the impact, economic and social impact. All we were interested in of the closure of VY, produced a report. From that, I became very interested in what happens in communities that have nuclear power plants that close. I was aware at the time, in fact, I had a good relationship with John Mullen, a professor at UMass, who had actually written the only report we know of on what happens to a community when it has a nuclear power plant and closes, and that would be the community that hosted Yankee Row, Massachusetts, and the surrounding small towns. And when the announcement came last August, I contacted John and said, I think we have an issue here. He had said at another place that he thought some research needed to be done. He and I started meeting. He brought in two grad students of his from UMass. Jennifer is one of those, and she's been an incredible addition to this in terms of research, organization, energy, intelligence, et cetera, and so forth, and all the great things you can say about people. And our point was that we began to do research globally. We began to look at Japan, Europe, and around the U.S., and saw that, and Jennifer summarized this most effectively by saying that communities that hosted nuclear power plants that have closed are by and large worse off after the plant closes than before the plant opened. It takes a minute to wrap your head around that. They're worse off after it closes than they were before it opened. What that told us, when we finally began to understand that, is most of these are, by public policy, we can go into that, located in rural or very semi-rural kinds of areas that were entering 40 years ago or 50 years ago a declining economy. The nuclear power plant actually has a lot of high-paid people. That tends to mask the losses that are going on underneath that. So anyway, that's a rough and quick summary of the kinds of things that we were really interested in, got us driving into this and doing some research. So we've continued that. Have a variety of conversations going on across the country, some internationally, trying to continue our research, build some coalitions, educate communities that have plants that will close in the next 10, 15, or 20 years, that they need to start thinking about that today, not at the closure. So, sorry for the long speech, Amy, but, you know, you start me up and I keep going.
Yeah, thanks for that great overview. Jennifer, I'd like you to introduce yourself, and I know you're working on 5 program areas for the Institute. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. Yeah. So as Jeff said, Jeff and John Mullen brought on board me, another research fellow, and then there's a fifth member who's a research person, a terrific guy from UMass. So sort of the 5 of us have been working on this in different ways over the last several months. What we kind of understand as far as the need is that there's sort of a lack of. I'll tell you an anecdote. What happens when you get the phone call that your nuclear power plant is closing is you cast around and you say, well, what do I do? and really your best resource is to call another community, and it seems to be what happens. We have sort of learned about a series of phone calls, whether it has to do with, you know, getting some mitigation money, like what Vermont and Entergy, sort of the MOU has yielded, or whether it has to do with safety and environmental practices, communities and states and regions and all of the authorities involved in different pieces of closure and decommissioning look to each other to learn. And so one of the ways that we think about our programs is trying to sort of improve and formalize this practice. It works pretty well, but it tends to be limited to the knowledge of the person making the phone call and what has been recent and what seems applicable. So one of our primary programs is just simply networking. It's to get all of the 60-plus communities that host 100 or so reactors in the country, that all of which will be closed by the last 2 decades of the century, to be able to connect with each other more effectively, learn from each other to figure out what they have as far as shared experience, to get to sort of best practices as quickly as possible. So creating a network of systems. And then another piece of that, which is another program, is really creating opportunities for education, materials for education. So you can take, for instance, you know, the 10 best experiences in environmental and safety management that had sort of good economic benefits for the region as well, and you know, put those out there. I mean, just sharing learnings. The other 3 programs are policy, public policy, because what we know is there is not enough understanding of what can and can't be done by communities, and that's that really needs to be understood, and we're pretty sure there are ways that we can improve the leverage that communities have to assist the resources they need to bounce back or to prepare for the closure impact on a variety of levels. Then we have sort of research. We know very clear that there just simply isn't enough information. We have spent the last several months collecting anything we can find, not just domestically, but just from around the world. Limited by, of course, you know, what we can find in the English language for now. But we're not really seeing a tremendous amount of research except in these very kind of narrow pieces. So, you know, how do we guarantee that there's enough electricity being generated, which is great, but that doesn't really answer the issues on the true impact in the region. So those are, you know, those are the big pieces. And then consulting is going to be a piece of what we do, because the reality is there are a lot of shared problems, but every single community is going to have a very particular set of factors that will have to do with, you know, the specific economic context. It will have to do with whether it's an emergency plant or a public utility, or, you know, what is the state legislative context going to enable to happen afterwards. So there's going to be basically a custom set of decisions and actions in each situation, and that. You know, some of it is really just figuring out the timeline for starting to take action. As Jeff described, they got studying this a few years ago, not knowing Vermont Yankee's closure was coming. What they kind of accidentally discovered was they were more timely than they had hoped to be when the closure was announced. But at the same time, have been realizing along the way that a few years is not enough. I mean, every community would do better to start thinking about this 10 years ahead. And to really start looking at ways to replace economic activity and to be prepared for all of the sort of demands placed on that community across the board, including environmental and safety. And Chris Williams will speak to that more effectively. You really need years to understand how this is going to impact your region, your towns, and your state, your budgets, and the people.
So one question I wanted to ask the two of you is, why don't communities prepare for what seems to be potentially an inevitable action of the power plant shutting down?
That is the $64 billion question, almost literally. There are a variety of reasons. One of them is it's a very long planning horizon. If you start from the time the first words are uttered about we'd like to build a plant in your area, it's possibly as much as 65 years before that will run out of license time. Now, we know that most plants are closing well before their license expires, either their original license or their extension. But there is a maximum life for the containment vessel. I mean, it can't go beyond a certain length, and when it reaches fracture stage, the plant has to shut down no matter what. So people should know going in this thing is not going to be permanent. But what we have, I think, is a kind of human situation where let's not rock the boat and let's just see what happens. Really, it's I think that simple. It's just simple humanity. There are some more proximate things that are far more interesting. Like one of the reasons there wasn't a lot of conversation around here is that there was a lot of discussion and pretty high tension around the plant's continued operation, whether people liked it, nuclear energy, et cetera, and so forth, that made it very difficult to talk about the plant because the issue immediately became whether or not the plant should be there, not what would happen when it wasn't there. On the other hand, and this was an interesting discovery, in another location, Kewaunee, Wisconsin, we found precisely the opposite set of conditions. That local community liked their little nuclear power plant. They liked the people who worked there. They liked the fact that it was there. And they didn't want to talk about it closing because they liked having it in the neighborhood. So, in other words, the reasons that contribute to a lack of conversation about this can vary all over the map. So, but they're all interesting stories, Amy. That's the fun part.
So do you think
I'll round that out with just a couple of other specific things, which is, you know, we don't plan in the U.S. We kind of just place externalities and gamble. And that's the general approach. We say, whoa, that's down the road. Let's kick that can down the road. And so sometimes when you talk about this topic, there comes up that, well, but it might extend licenses another 10 or 20 years. And so it's just we place. Another problem is that the scale of the impacts don't tend to match the government scales. So here in Vermont Yankee, the great example, because you have environmental safety and economic impacts across three states, at least three counties, and it's really difficult to do planning even within any one of those jurisdictions. So that's a really important thing. And then just when it comes to really basic stuff, I mean, we've just been looking at a report that came out last week about bond ratings and that, you know, bond agencies' concern about the reliance on these utilities, but coal and nuclear is causes a form of exposure. You know, communities can be reliant for more than half of their tax base on it, but it's politically infeasible to plan for the end of that. There's really not a case in which communities, whether it's a factory or anything, do a great job of looking down the road and saying, hey, this thing is going to end. We have to think about that rainy day. That's just not possible with the way that we do sort of local and county tax policy.
So do you think that Vermont, because it started a few years ago, even though it wasn't as long as you would have liked, do you think we're better off than some of these other communities have been? Do you think we're in a decent position, or are you really concerned about what's going to happen next?
Jeff, you have to take that one.
We lost Jeff. Jeff is hung up. So we're trying to get back to Jeff. Let me ask you, Jen, another question while we're waiting. What kinds of things will you be doing next? If people wanted to find out more information about what you're doing or collecting, is there a way for them to get involved or to find out what's going on?
Sure. We're actually, we just, John Mull and I just made a presentation this past week to the board of the Franklin County Regional Planning Agency, because one of the things that's been really fun is that governance problem, the problem with the scale not matching the governance structures, is this area has been exceptional in many ways. I mean, sort of to answer your last question, the planning here is exceptional, and in many ways Vermont has been exceptional, not just in its various activisms and advocacies, but really the state did a great job of negotiating with energy and finding those policy handles. The three counties and the three states, the regional planning agencies, are working together in a way that I don't know that we would see in other regions in the same way. Maybe we would, but there are a lot of terrific things that have emerged here. You'd always wish you had more time. So what we're kind of working on is that kind of collaboration. We're thinking about what are the next closures. But most of all, we are focused on, in the next several months, really getting this national network launched so that every community is able to sort of find each other and find their counterparts and to be learning and to be aware and start having this on the horizon and getting more attention to this. We had this whole conference in April to try and capture learnings from this area, because there really are a lot of exceptional ideas and practices that have been at least attempted and starting to be developed here or have been enacted in Vista Vermont. And one of the things that came out of that was, two of Vermont senators really take this seriously. They take the entire spectrum of impact seriously, environmental, safety, and socioeconomic. And so there's some opportunity there. Already we're seeing, some legislation being put forth and may not succeed right away, but there's a growing awareness of the importance of this and that it has a lot of crossover impacts with general sort of energy transition impacts on rural communities, on a lot of communities that might otherwise just sort of have to basically, suffer and then see what comes next. So we feel like we're paying attention to what's happening politically and sort of in the policy and really trying to form this network. And so we're working with a couple of existing organizations, national organizations, that have connections within all of these host communities to deliver content through them. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're not trying to basically make things even more complicated for communities. You want to work through existing networks that your development planner or your whoever or your mayor of the town are sort of getting these connections through groups that they already connect with through conferences that you attend. That's kind of what we're focused on right now. So national and then responding directly in sort of this local context and in contact with some other communities that will be facing closing in the near future.
So if folks here in Vermont wanted to keep up with your activities, is there a way they can do that?
Yeah. I think that probably what will be happening by the fall is we'll feel pretty comfortable putting out there, putting up a website and getting a really, the five programs kind of out there. Right now, we have partners on three of those five programs that we're really excited about, but we're just being pretty cautious about what we say underneath those, so that again, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We have some terrific institutions in the region who are taking on a lot of the research pieces, and so we hope to have some exciting announcements as those things develop. So I guess I'm saying, look at the press. We will tell you every exciting thing as it happens. And then once we're ready to really provide the networking services, we're going to launch a website and really push that out to communities.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Jennifer, and also to Jeffrey Lewis. Everybody who's listening can watch for updates on the Institute for Nuclear Host Communities website coming this fall. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you, Andy.
So just to remind listeners, we're talking about issues related to the decommissioning of Vermont Yankee, and if you'd like to join us, you can call in at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. So Chris Williams is here in the studio with me today, and he's a board member for the Citizens Awareness Network. Thanks for joining today, Chris.
Glad to be here.
How about you tell us a little bit about yourself and about CAN and how you got involved?
I've been involved in sustainable energy issues and the economic angles of the energy debate since I graduated from college over in Plattsburgh back in the in the mid-70s, which was just after the energy crisis. So it was a big big issue then. It's a big issue now. And I've spent my career working for various not-for-profit organizations as a sustainable energy advocate. And about 10 years ago, I moved back to Vermont, and I was going to take a break from tangling with large corporations. And the folks at Citizens Awareness Network invited me to a meeting, and I've been in the trenches with them, working to close Vermont Yankee for the last 10 years. So,
and you're also on the board of NIERS. I wanted to mention that, and you can tell us about that group a little bit as well.
The Nuclear Information and Resource Service is based in Washington, D.C., and is basically a clearinghouse for the anti-nuclear movement, not only in the U.S., but we're networked globally in the struggle to close nuclear power plants.
They're one of my go-to sources for information, for sure.
And you can go to NIRS.org. It's a very, very rich website. Got a lot of great information.
And while we're at it, if you want to check out the Citizens Awareness Network, that website is nukebusters.org. So CAN is watching a few key issues right now regarding decommissioning. We're going to talk about all of them, but let's start with the Certificate of Public Good.
As most of the listeners probably know, the Public Service Board granted a Certificate of Public Good to Vermont Yankee and Entergy through the end of this year for the operation of the plant. They had originally asked for 20 years. It was a very contentious and long-term hearing and procedure. I don't think the Public Service Board would have gone for 20, but they did decide that in the wake of the announcement that the plant was closing, that they would in fact grant the certificate for 1 year or one calendar year, meaning 2014, essentially. The most interesting part of the, or for me anyway, the most interesting part of the lengthy decision that the Public Service Board made was their response to numerous objections that Entergy raised during the proceeding, which the board deferred judgment on until they put out their final order. And in the final order, they basically denied all of Entergy's outstanding objections, and by doing that, basically made it very clear that the Public Service Board retains its authority with regard to Vermont Yankee and its operations, and to some extent, some post-operation issues.
So talk about that a little bit, because there's a lot that Vermont just doesn't have control over. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is primarily responsible for most things around decommissioning, but talk a little bit about what the Public Service Board can do, especially through the Certificate of Public Good.
Well, I think it's important for people to remember, just as you said, that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission retains most authority over the decommissioning, as well as the company. Retains a lot of authority and power and decision-making with regard to the process. Citizens Awareness Network learned quite a bit about the process through the decommissioning of Yankee Row, which CAN members were involved in, as well as the decommissioning of Connecticut Yankee. And again, there were several key CAN members involved in that, and it, the bottom line is that there isn't a lot for the communities and or the state to do with regard to decommissioning. Now, what the state retains authority over are traditional areas regarding radiological safety beyond the fence line, meaning as the state has done for the duration of the plant's operation, the state, through the health department, monitors the radiation beyond the fence line, as they say. That will continue. water quality issues for both radiological emissions as well as other chemicals. Certainly the biggest concern people have with regard to Vermont Yankee is radioactive material, but when you're dismantling an industrial plant of that size and scale, that close to a major body of water as well as groundwater, the state will retain full authority to monitor and police the water resources in the area.
We'll come back to that in just a moment. So tell me a little bit about the deal that was associated with the Certificate of Public Good. Jeffrey mentioned this as well, that the state has negotiated with the company. What does that mean, and what does it mean for Vermonters?
Well, it's been hotly debated, but our opinion at CAN was that the negotiated settlement agreement, which was basically negotiated between the Department of Public Service, which is the state, the Agency of Natural Resources, and the Department of Commerce with Entergy, and was basically presented to the Public Service Board as part of the Certificate of Public Good proceeding, is basically unprecedented in the U.S. in terms of the terms that were negotiated up front with the company. From our perspective, the most important issue is the company is making payments to the state and to other communities within the state upon closure for economic development. And in addition to that, the company has agreed, although it's not binding yet because they have to get approval from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, to move the spent fuel that is now stored in an above-ground pool seven stories in the air to dry cask storage on what in the industry would be considered an expedited schedule. They're looking at about 7 years after closure for having all of the spent fuel transferred to dry casks. That in itself is a very significant piece of the agreement, and one that we're going to be watching, monitoring, and watchdogging, if you will, for the immediate future.
So Artie's giving me the eye. Does that mean we need to take a break, Artie? Here we go.
Old John McKenzie was a dedicated man, made the best pork sausage in all the land. John told his boys, both clear and loud, carry on the name and do me proud. Well, his boys carried on and expanded the line with cold cuts, franks, and meats mighty fine. Make them all better, Grandpa'd say, like McKenzie boys are doing today. McKenzie meats.
Did you know that you can e-cycle your old electronics for free? There are new laws in Vermont designed to keep toxic electronics out of our landfills and make it easy to e-cycle. If you have old computers or monitors, peripherals like printers, scanners, or keyboards, even old televisions, you can drop them off at over 90 locations across the state. Find a location online at vtecycles.org or call 1-855-6-ECYCLE. It's absolutely free for all Vermont households, school districts, nonprofits, and small businesses with 10 or less employees. But remember, your privacy is your responsibility. Personal information should be completely removed from your hard drives before recycling them. For information about data destruction or to find a drop-off location, visit vtecycles.org or call 855-6-ECYCLE. It's easy to e-cycle.
Welcome back to Equal Time. This is Amy Schollenberger sitting in for Anthony Polina. Thanks for listening today. We're talking with Chris Williams from the Citizens Awareness Network, and we're going to be joined in just a moment by Deborah Stoleroff from the Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call in at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. So, Chris, you've been talking about the Certificate of Public Good and the deal that was arranged with Vermont Yankee, negotiated by the state. Another thing I just wanted to talk about for a moment before we bring in Deborah is the new Citizens Advisory Panel that was just created this legislative session, and I know Ken worked pretty hard on that, so why don't you talk about that a little bit?
The state has, by statute for a long time, maintained and operated a panel called the Vermont State Nuclear Advisory Panel, which, as its name states, is involved in oversight and advice. As the closure became more imminent, it dawned on many of us that we're going to need a new panel to deal with the issues of decommissioning. And in previous decommissionings, and Maine Yankee, Connecticut Yankee, and Yankee Row come to mind, there were established citizen oversight or advisory panels. They don't have the authority to walk onto the property and say, stop this, don't do that, but they do have the authority to monitor what's going on, ask the questions that need to be asked, and hopefully bring in some expertise to answer some of those questions should the need arise. So this year, CAN, along with some of our allies, worked with the Shumlin administration and with the legislative leadership to basically get the statute that created and maintained the Vermont State Nuclear Advisory Panel amended to create the Citizens Advisory Panel. And the panel will have representatives from the Department of Public Service, from the Windham Regional Commission, from the State Department of Health, as well as representatives from the states of Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts, as well as six at-large citizen members, two of whom will be appointed by the governor, two by the Speaker of the House, and two by the President pro tem of the Senate. And at the very least, the panel will meet four times a year, and all of those meetings will be open to the public and will be structured to receive comments from the public, just as the Vermont State Nuclear Advisory Panel has been.
A few other members, I know it's hard to remember them all, it's going to be a big panel. A few other members are a couple of representatives, of course, from the company, Vermont Yankee,
right,
and one from the union there, the IBEW. Also a representative from the town of Vernon and someone from the Agency of Natural Resources as well as the Agency of Human Services. So it'll be a lot of people talking about issues as they arise. And as I understand it, the group will be able to hear from the company about plans as they decommission so that they can at least weigh in. As you said, they don't have any authority to change anything, but they might be able to offer some advice or ask questions. They can also get reports about the money in the decommissioning trust fund.
Correct.
So that Vermonters can keep an eye on how much money is building up in the fund as we go forward.
How much money is building up and how much
money
is being spent down. So.
Yeah. So let's welcome Deborah. Deborah Stoleroff is with the Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
How about introducing yourself and telling us what is the Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance?
The Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance is, I believe, the oldest organization in Vermont that has been working on closing and decommissioning Vermont Yankee, and so it's been folks started working on this issue soon after they started getting involved when Seabrook, when we were all fighting Seabrook back in the early 80s, late 70s, and then as soon as Vermont Yankee, that one vote that opened Vermont Yankee happened in the legislature, Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance was formed to try to start shutting it down. So it's been, we were very active for many, many years, and then there was a hiatus of a number of years, and became back active again probably about 10 or 12 years ago.
And have you been involved since the beginning, Deborah?
I was not involved in the sense of doing actions. I was support group. I was part of an affinity group in the beginning, but I was less active than I have been over the last 10 years.
And how did you first get involved in working on nuclear issues?
Yeah. I think I was an environmental studies major at the University of Vermont during the mid to late 70s. So that was one of, you know, the many ways that I heard about nuclear power. I was not aware of nuclear power issues when I was in high school. It wasn't until I was in college. When I graduated from the university, at some point, I started working at the Horn of the Moon, which was, as many people in this area know, a cafe that was on Langdon Street in Montpelier for many, many years, and it was owned at that time by Ginny Callan and Chris Wood, and they were both incredibly active in the fight against nuclear power. And in fact, that's where all of the affinity group meetings were happening back in the very beginning of Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance. And so I couldn't help but be aware and get involved.
That's great. That's a great story. So what kinds of activities has Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance done in the past, and what are you doing now that Vermont Yankee is actually decommissioning?
In the past, we, we've done everything from organized mass demonstrations in Montpelier and down in Brattleboro. We've organized many educational tours teaching people about the health effects of nuclear power plants, environmental justice issues around nuclear power plants, getting rid of the waste. What were some of our other tours? We had tours where we had younger members going out and, you know, teaching kids around in colleges around nuclear issues. We have held forums on nuclear issues. We were one of the key groups that was involved with the legislation that happened over the last 10, 11 years. We in the beginning didn't want to become involved with that, but then found out that very quickly that was really the way that we were going to make the closing of Vermont Yankee happen in the state of Vermont. And so we became involved with legislative and lobbying, helping to lobby to shut down Vermont Yankee. Chris is here. He's also a member of Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance. And I'm forgetting some stuff, Chris, I know. Is there anything else you can...
Well, I just want to say thank you for all that great work. I know your group has played a big role both in working to shut Vermont Yankee down, but also just to help Vermonters to be more informed about what's going on. And just to come back to some of the issues that are happening right now, Chris, one of the other things I wanted to talk about is the emergency planning zone and the request to do away with that and what might be happening around that.
We're pretty worked up about the company's announcement that they'd like to basically shrink the emergency planning zone and and stand down on some of their emergency planning work. As long as the spent fuel is sitting in a pool seven stories in the air, meaning until they move it all to dry cask storage on site, we believe that there is significant need for the continuation of all of the emergency planning contingencies that the company has had in place, not less. So we're going to be taking that message to the administration, and I believe they get it. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the company, the local communities. It's just unacceptable that that they take that part of their operation down just because the plant will no longer be actively splitting atoms and boiling water.
And there's some money involved with the EPZ, as they call it, right, with the Red Cross that the company has to pay. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the Red Cross, as well as communities in the EPZ, the emergency
planning
zone, get some funding from Entergy to prepare for the worst. And we don't want to see that go away. We want to see the preparedness stay in place, and we want to see that money continue to be appropriated to the proper agencies or organizations. And, again, that's something that we'll be bringing up as it's needed as we go along here.
And if folks want to stay on top of that, Citizens Awareness Network does post updates on their website. You can also sign up for their email alerts at nukebusters.org. Deborah, does Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance have a website?
No, not anymore. We used to, but it was just too much work to get it.
I understand. So one of the... do you want to add anything about the emergency planning zone?
Well, not much, except that it's, you know, one of the ways that we're going to work on that is just by putting pressure on the company and our legislators through letters to the editor and hopefully getting folks to write some op-eds and... So that's all I'd add about that. And I think, actually, in general, that's one of the most important ways that people can get involved in right now is to, you know, there's a few issues that need to be, that we need to keep the public and our legislators and Entergy aware of, that we are, aware of them, and we want to make sure that that the plant is decommissioned safely and quickly.
So one of the other issues that's literally a hot issue is that of the thermal discharge permit.
Right.
And Deborah, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Right.
I know you're involved
so,
in
you know, the issue of the pollution of the Connecticut River continues to be, it's ongoing. And there has not yet been... any rulings on that, but there will be a public hearing coming up at some point. So we're going to start mobilizing people to turn out at the public hearing to find out, you know, what the ruling will be from the Public Service Board, and to hopefully have an influence on what the Public Service Board is deciding around that. We're hoping that they will move to a closed cycle cooling system, and one that that's one that Entergy has not wanted to move to, because it's going to cost some money for them to make that happen.
It's actually the Agency for Natural Resources that'll issue
the ruling.
Yeah, the permit.
Okay.
And
so are they the ones that are holding the hearing then?
Yes, because what they'll do initially is put out a draft permit and ask for public comment on the draft permit. And it's our understanding it's been leaked out there somewhere, and leaking probably isn't a good term to use when discussing Vermont Yankee, but it's been leaked that the agency is going to require Yankee through the discharge permit to move to a closed cycle cooling system. It may end up in the end being moot because it's now almost July, and people say, you know, we could see closure anywhere from the middle of October to New Year's Day. So it's anybody's guess at this point. If Entergy wants to share, you know, some insight into what day, you know, the plant will actually close, we're all ears. So
if anyone from Entergy is listening and would like to call in, the number is 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Of course, anyone can call in if you have a comment or a question. So just to clarify for folks who might be interested in the thermal discharge permit, they should watch the Agency of Natural Resources website as well as the Citizens Awareness Network website, nukebusters.org. And as Chris explained, there will be a draft permit first, and then there will be a comment period with a hearing.
Right.
And that's when you might want to get your comments on the record if you are supporting that closed cycle cooling system. And I'm sure the Decommissioning Alliance will also be helping folks to get involved in that and submit their comments.
Right, as well as the Connecticut River
Watershed Council.
Yes.
They've been the lead group along with the folks at VNRC on that issue.
Great. Well, we appreciate all of our allies for sure. And I think one of the great things about Vermont is there's a lot of groups working on a lot of issues, and we like to work together to make things happen.
Right. In fact, I'd like to say that we couldn't do it without each other.
Amen.
There were many, many, many groups involved, and they were all incredibly important.
So I just wanted to go back to the Citizens Advisory Panel for a moment. We were talking about that before the break, and I just wanted to mention that folks have not yet been appointed to this panel. I had a message from Commissioner Recchia this morning. I called him to find out if there was any update, and he said that the administration and the others who are to make the appointments for the panel members are reviewing some of the folks who have said they're interested, and they should be making their appointments soon, so you can watch for the news about that panel meeting. And one of the first things they're likely to look at is, you know, what will happen in decommissioning? What's the plan? And so, Chris, can you just talk about how that might roll out?
Well, one of the points in the agreement that we talked about initially at the beginning of the show was that rather than waiting for 2 years after the plant closes to produce a decommissioning audit and plan, Entergy agreed to have that decommissioning audit or decommissioning overview report in the hands of the state by the end of this year. And that's actually very significant. They could have waited until December of 2016, had the plant closed, or should the plant close in December of 2014, but instead agreed to get that important information in the hands of the state and citizens and policymakers on an expedited schedule. And one of the biggest concerns we have is that the current employees have significant knowledge about where spills have occurred, where there might have been problems at the plant that are going to require significant remediation beyond what would be normally expected, and identifying those places where that kind of remediation needs to take place sooner rather than later will be very useful when we also look at the money involved, because the estimates for decommissioning have a way, just like the estimates for construction of nuclear power plants have a way of escalating very quickly once the process begins. And we're going to want to know what's where and how much do we think it's going to cost, and the sooner the better.
And so just to not to beat a dead horse, but to remind listeners that the Citizens Advisory Panel will be looking at that plan, the decommissioning audit, and there will be a forum through that panel for public comment on the plan and on things that people are concerned about. Just quickly, Chris, one thing I know, one of the reasons we want to identify those places is because if we're building a pad to put the spent nuclear fuel on, we want to make sure there's nothing underneath that pad that we can't clean up after the waste is moved out.
Right. That's a very significant concern. The tritium leak that caused so much concern 4 or 5 years ago went down pretty deep. And we want to make sure that the new parking lot, if you will, for the dry casks. We have one in place right now, and last time I checked, there were 18 full casks sitting on the original pad. They're going to need to construct another one because we're going to ultimately end up with 58 casks of high-level nuclear waste down there. We don't want that pad built over the area where that significant tritium leak occurred in 2010.
And we have to make sure, though, that we do get the fuel out of the pool. So it's a touchy subject, and we want to make sure we do it as well as we can.
Correct.
So, Deborah, any last thoughts you want to talk about for folks to get involved or how they might find out more about Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance activities?
Well, to find out about, first I'll say to get involved, the most important way that folks can get involved right now is to keep the pressure up either by making phone calls or by writing letters to the editor or writing letters directly to all of the stakeholders. And that includes the legislature, Entergy. It includes, people on the who will be on the CAP committee. So, and the Department of Public Service. All of those stakeholders need to have pressure kept up on them from the public. That's incredibly important. Folks can find out about the Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance either, but they can call me directly at 476-3154. We continue to meet during the summer. We meet generally once a month. It's always on a Monday. In fact, we're meeting tonight at 5:00, and we're in our summer mode. We meet at Positive Pi. We'll be there at 5:00, and then in the winter we go back to meeting on second and fourth, and fall and winter and spring, second and fourth Mondays at 5:00 at the Unitarian Church in Montpelier.
So just for listeners, that's Positive Pi in Montpelier at 5:00 tonight if you want to get involved with Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance. Thank you so much, Deborah. Thank you to all of our guests today, Jeff Lewis and Jennifer Stromston from the Institute for Nuclear Host Communities, Chris Williams from the Citizens Awareness Network, and Deborah Stolaroff from the Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance. And thanks to you all listeners. Next week, we'll be talking about income inequality and social justice. I hope you'll tune in Monday at 1.
Locally owned and operated, 96.1 WDEV, FM and Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie and AM 550, WDEV, Waterbury, Montpelier, serving the Kingdom at FM 101.9 from Island Pond.
AP Radio News, I'm Carlotta Bradley.